Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dotson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on a multi-million dollar tax referendum proposed by the Geary Community School Corporation. Justin Higgs reports the Department of Workforce Development says it will soon begin issuing an extra $300 in payments to unemployed Hoosiers. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with CareSource CEO Steve Smitherman about its $5 million in investment to housing projects that focus on underserved communities in high-poverty areas. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Ford, one of the Calumet region's largest industrial employers, is looking to slash 1,400 jobs nationwide. The Dearborn, Michigan-based automaker, which runs the Chicago Assembly Plant and the Chicago Stamping Plant, plans to reduce salaried, white-collar, non-union positions nationwide. Ford lost $1.9 million in the second quarter and is looking to slash costs to remain competitive. The Detroit Free Press reported Ford's buyout incentives include 3 months of severance pay for employees with 7 years of experience, 6 months of severance pay with 8 years, 6 months of severance pay with 8 to 15 years of services, and 9 months of severance with at least 16 years with the company. Departing employees will not get medical, dental, life insurance, or other benefits after they leave the company. Ford employees will have until October 23rd to decide whether to put in for a buyout. Most Ford employees in the Calumet region would not be eligible for the buyouts.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The city of Crown Point is keeping its pockets tight for the upcoming fiscal year. During a Tuesday evening city council meeting, city officials considered the city's 2021 budget and additional city fund ordinances on first reading. As proposed, the city's budget would see a 14.2% increase, coming in at $39.6 million. In 2020, the city's budget was at $34.6 million. The Times reports, despite the increase, Crown Point Mayor David Uran said city departments were asked to stay close to their 2020 budgets. The proposed 2021 budget does not include a pay increase for elected officials or city employees. Though the city has approved stipends for employees previously, including during the 2008 housing crisis, Uran said the city chose not to move forward with stipends in 2021. Uran goes on to say the leap year presented a challenge when looking at offering a stipend or a pay raise, as employees will receive 27 paychecks in 2020 and 26 in 2021 because of where the holiday falls. Uran added an additional appropriation will likely need to be done at the end of the year to make payroll. Additionally, the budget committee has discussed giving employees an additional day off since a raise wasn't possible. A public hearing will be held on October 5th for the city's budget and salary ordinances for elected officials and city employees.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Geary Common Council is considering endorsing the school corporation's proposed $71.2 million tax referendum. The vote, set for later this month, would signal a major show of support from Geary City Hall, with weeks left to go before the question is posed to voters on the November 3rd ballot. Geary Schools manager Paige McNulty spent most of her time at the council's planning committee virtual meeting Tuesday evening combating myths and misconceptions about the district's current fiscal condition and clarified how any monies raised through the referendum would be used. Some in attendance questioned the value of passing this referendum while public distrust is still alive and well in Geary and the district's finances remains largely still controlled by the state. But several community members, including former Gary Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson and New Shiloh Baptist Church Pastor Corey Jackson, spoke in support of the ordinance. The Times reports, in her impassioned plea during the council meeting, Freeman Wilson shared that teachers, like many city workers, have worked tirelessly without raises for an extended period and that the referendum will provide services to children they would otherwise not have. McNulty said, if approved by voters on November 3rd, the referendum will provide the district an estimated $8.9 million in annual operating revenue. The first $1 million would provide a much-needed raise to teachers who haven't seen a raise in 12 years. McNulty said other referendum dollars will go towards athletics, arts, extracurricular and after-school programs, on-site counselors and therapists to improve social-emotional health of students, and enhancements to curriculum, teacher training, and technology.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Pharmaceutical company AstraZeneca announced Wednesday morning that its COVID-19 vaccine trial is on hold after a volunteer in the UK had an unexplained illness. The pause includes the trial set to take place through the IU School of Medicine this fall. An IU School of Medicine spokesperson said IU had not begun enrolling vaccine trial participants and no one had been given a dose of the vaccine. In a statement, AstraZeneca said unexplained illnesses will happen by chance in all large clinical trials, and it's standard procedure for those incidents to be independently reviewed. The company did not say what the unexplained illness was or when trials will resume.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Department of Workforce Development says it will begin issuing extra $300 payments to unemployed Hoosiers on September 21st. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports there are still many unemployed people who won't get the federal lost wages assistance funds.
Per White House guidelines, Hoosiers have to be approved to receive at least $100 of unemployment benefits in order to get the extra $300. DWD estimates somewhere between 25 to 30,000 Hoosiers don't receive enough from the state's unemployment insurance program to be eligible. Additionally, claimants waiting to be approved for benefits could miss out on the extra money if FEMA's $44 billion fund runs out before their issues are resolved. DWD Commissioner Fred Payne says his staff is currently working with federal agencies to deal with that if it happens.
I can't give you a definite answer on that right now, other than our goal is to ensure that every Hoosier who's eligible will receive the $300 benefit.
For the many unemployed workers who are eligible for lost wages assistance, Indiana is currently approved to pay up to 5 weeks of extra benefits retroactively. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Many schools in Indiana are working to provide some sort of in-person instruction to students as they reopen. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports school leaders say a shortage of teachers could force them to move online again.
This school year, teachers are providing instruction in person, online, and in some cases, both. But school leaders are struggling to find enough qualified staff to cover when teachers have to leave their classrooms. Frontier School Corporation Superintendent Dan Seesting says his district only has 5 substitutes on hand.
This is by far more difficult than any other years that we've seen up to this point.
He says staffing shortages have meant closing things like the school library or computer lab for the day while existing staff fill in. And if the problem persists, school corporations like his might not have another option than to move online. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana businesses can now easily file, pay, and manage their state taxes online in a web portal in time set up by the Indiana Department of Revenue. The availability of InTime for business customers is phase two of a four-year overhaul of the state agency's technology. The second phase allows sales and withholding taxes to be filed and paid online, which account for more than half of the state's annual revenue. More than 200,000 customers can also manage any tax letters and notices in one location and easily communicate with the Department of Revenue staff. DOR systems had not been modernized in more than two decades before the project began. Phase one, unveiled last year, was for corporate taxes. The next phase, scheduled for launch in September 2021, will include individual income taxes.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana won't participate in the payroll tax deferral for state workers offered by President Trump last month. The Trump executive order allows employers to push back payroll taxes from September through the end of December for employees making less than $4,000 every 2 weeks. But Governor Eric Holcomb says Indiana state government declined to do so.
It's a delay, and you'd end up having to pick up in January and pay double.
Trump officials have floated the idea of forgiving those deferred taxes entirely, but Congress would need to approve such a move, and it's unclear whether it would do so.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Health officials say testing is crucial to limiting the spread of COVID-19. But some health advocates say culturally sensitive care is just as important, and that's been lacking in communities hit hardest by the virus. SideFX Public Media's Lauren Bavis reports mistrust in those communities could make testing less successful.
On a Friday evening in late June, Liliana Quintero received a call from one of the Spanish interpreters working at a COVID-19 testing site in Goshen, Indiana. The area has one of the state's higher Latinx populations and higher rates of COVID-19 cases.
Say, Liliana, I need to inform you that the nurse who is in charge of this site just told me that each time that she sees Hispanics coming to this site, she's going to call the police.
That sort of racial profiling upset Quintero and was a serious threat to local residents. County and state health officials quickly shut down the testing site and replaced it with one managed by the state. Optum, the state contractor that provided testing, apologized to the Goshen community. In an emailed statement, Optum said it ended our relationship with this person upon learning of their behavior, which was totally inconsistent with our values.
It was sad. It was hard.
Quintero is director of the Northern Indiana Hispanic Health Coalition. She says the incident could have undermined work to build their clients' trust in the local government.
We cannot be always there acting as a bridge. That was the beginning of a lot of huge learning experience for everybody.
The profiling incident is also part of a larger problem. Months into Indiana's fight against COVID-19, some community health leaders say testing efforts don't always consider the Hoosiers they serve. That includes Black and Latinx Hoosiers, as well as undocumented immigrants and refugees.
In general, they're afraid of any government.
Margarita Hart is executive director for Esperanza Ministries, a nonprofit that works with undocumented immigrants. She's also executive director of the Indiana Community Health Workers Association. Her organizations have spent years building trust in Black and brown communities. Yet Hart says the state didn't reach out to them when building its pandemic response.
But you're taking an asset and ignoring it. You know, it's like hammering a nail with a rock instead of the hammer that you already have in your toolbox.
The State Department of Health said in an email that testing site employees do not ask questions about citizenship or immigration status. But Hart said stories like the one in Goshen spread quickly on social media. She isn't willing to tell undocumented people she works with that they'll be safe from immigration if they go to a testing site. That could undermine her credibility.
But you know, it takes one nurse, one individual, one person in that testing site to to simply call the police, for them to then turn around and said, but Margarita, you said no one was going to come after us.
Community health leaders say the state's COVID response has been more successful with local input. One example is a state study on how the virus spreads. It initially recruited participants to be tested by sending out postcards.
We knew immediately that people of color would not respond to those postcards.
That's Sharon Tubbs, the director of Health Visions Midwest, a health education organization in Fort Wayne. Because of a history of mistrust of government and research, Tubbs didn't think members of the Black, Latinx, and refugee communities would participate in the study. So she pushed for a more meaningful project with the state.
We felt that we needed some more collaboration on the front end.
In a letter to the state, Health Visions Midwest said they would not help with a testing site for the study unless the state offered tests to everyone in the community. The state agreed, and Tubbs says a site in Fort Wayne tested more than 300 people in one day. Meanwhile, Quintero advocated for testing on days and during hours better for factory workers in the Elkhart area. That was helpful for the many workers who are undocumented immigrants, and a far cry from the earlier racial profiling incident.
As I say, it's an eye-opener, and hopefully that is going to be helping everybody to be a little more caring, more empathetic about the reality of what we face.
In an email, the State Department of Health said it has worked extensively with representatives of Indiana's minority communities and other partners around the state to build awareness of the need for testing and resources that are available. The health advocates hope the state continues efforts to build trust in the communities hardest hit by the virus. Lauren Bavis, Side Effects Public Media.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's Regionally Speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with CareSource CEO Steve Smitherman.
CareSource, which is a nonprofit multi-state managed care plan that is based in Indiana, is going to commit $5 million in investments to affordable housing projects in Indiana. Well, what does a housing project have to do with an organization that basically deals with managed care and health care at that? Well, let's find out. Steve Smitherman is the president of CareSource Indiana, and he is with us from his office in Indianapolis to talk about it. Mr. Smitherman, thank you very much for being with us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first, give an idea briefly what CareSource is all about and why it would seem to be unusual for CareSource to be involved in a project that deals with housing.
Yeah, CareSource is, like you said, a multi-state managed care plan, and we've been in Indiana for several years now serving the Hoosier HealthWise Healthy Indiana plan and Marketplace members. We also are expanding into Medicare Advantage in January. And, you know, while it's unusual for a nonprofit like us to invest this way, we feel strongly it makes good financial sense for the organization because as housing resources improve, health outcomes also improve. And one of our large focuses at CareSource is to focus on the social determinants of health. So this is one way that we're able to do that.
I know that the National Low Income Housing Coalition has put out the information. Many people can take a look at that online. But as far as Indiana is concerned, how do things stand as far as having affordable rental housing and even, for that matter, I guess, housing that low income families may be able to afford? I guess there are very few that are available out there, aren't there?
There are actually. In Indiana, there is about 132,000 unit shortage of affordable housing for extremely low-income renters. And what the data is showing us is about 27%, or about 215,000 Hoosiers, are extremely low-income. 71% of those have severe rent burden of spending more than 50% of their income on rent. So that information alone was one of the things that really made us take a deep look into housing and the things that we could do to help and assist those individuals in those situations.
Mm-hmm. Now, was this information and feelings that came about prior to the coronavirus pandemic, which has upended everything, it seems?
Well, we initially were looking at this and for housing investment. About a year ago, we started to dive into this. And then, obviously, when the pandemic came about, it's gotten worse. You know, an April 2020 study from the Washington University suggests that individuals are now facing increased housing hardships such as eviction, those types of things, home repairs, unexpected utility payments, and you know, our fear is once the eviction moratorium is lifted, we're going to see a lot of people that are going to be struggling to find affordable, not only affordable, but safe housing.
And I know that CareSource Indiana right now is looking for partners throughout the Hoosier State to help with the commitment that that the organization is making and find some solutions to folks that are looking for affordable housing. And I understand that you even earlier this year even reached out into neighboring Ohio, and in particular to the capital city, to Columbus, Ohio. What was it about Columbus, Ohio and the surrounding county within that city that made you all interested in taking on this type of project there?
Well, I think the same thing that we've seen here. You know, we announced earlier this year a role as an investor in a $100 million housing action fund that was administered by the Affordable Housing Trust for Columbus, Ohio, and Franklin County. The goal of this fund is support the development of affordable housing. And what we saw in Columbus was a significant shortage of units that were available to low-income renters. Mm-hmm. So through this investment, we're, you know, hopeful that over time we'll be able to provide that safe, affordable housing for a number of individuals in Ohio and the Columbus area as well. Additionally, you know, we've joined with 33 other organizations asking senators and representatives to address housing instability in the next COVID-19 relief package. This has been dubbed the Emergency Rental Assistance and Rental Market Stabilization Act. It's a $100 billion rental relief fund that we think would provide tremendous support to individuals who are dealing with housing instability. And this letter was through the Opportunity Starts at Home, which is a long-term multi-sector campaign that works to meet the rental housing needs of the nation's lowest income people. So we were happy to join that organization as well and trying to drive change through federal measures as well.
We're talking with Steve Smitherton. He's the president of CareSource Indiana, which is a nonprofit multi-state managed care plan. But they have had commitment over the years through, I guess, some grant programs to help organizations and in turn get affordable housing for low-income residents in states, including Indiana. Tell us a little bit about this long-time grant program that you folks have established some time ago through your foundation.
Yeah, the CareSource Foundation has been instrumental in assisting and providing these types of grant opportunities, and not only Indiana and Ohio, but every state that we do business in. So we're very proud to be able, you know, and it's not only housing that we're focused on. We've done a number of things with food insecurity, jobs, assistance, placement programs, things like that for low-income individuals. So through the foundation, we're able to fund all those activities to really address the social determinants of health, which is a major focus for us.
What types of successes can you note to us about some of these foundation grants and how that obviously gave you all the optimism to be able to seek out partners in Indiana to expand this on a much bigger basis?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've seen is as individuals get into safe, affordable housing, we see significant improvement in their health outcomes. And that's really where we're focused. So making sure the individuals are healthy, if they're struggling paying their rent, paying their utilities, et cetera, the last thing they're going to focus on is their health. And that's really the driving force behind a lot of the work that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we right now, as you mentioned earlier, are looking for partners and opportunities to deploy these funds in Indiana, which in Indiana we're going to be investing $5 million and nationally in all the states we do business in upwards of $50 million. So a significant investment, especially from a nonprofit organization. But we understand, you know, our communities and what we need to do to help the underserved population and those individuals that are struggling with poverty. And we think providing them safe, affordable housing, you know, will help remove a lot of burdens from them that will then allow them to focus on their health care.
Now, based on what you have been able to do with partners in the past and with the other efforts that CareSource Indiana has been able to do, what are you hoping to get from the partners, we'll say here in Northwest Indiana, if any can be found up here that are really interested in joining in with you?
Yeah, I think our ideal partners for this initiative are community development financial institutions or just financial institutions overall who are investing in the community to bring more affordable housing. So, you know, anyone that meets that criteria, we would be interested in talking to. So happy for them to reach out to us as we explore. You know, we through the press release, we received a lot of requests from individuals looking for grants or funding for smaller projects. But I think what we're looking to do is be able to make a much larger impact than just, you know, small communities. So we're looking across the entire state of Indiana and where we can make the biggest impact with the investment so so we can get as many Hoosiers in affordable housing as possible.
Well, now, we're talking about some big sluggers in the process here. If any of them out there happen to be listening to this conversation, how can they get hold of you folks at CareSource about it?
Well, they can, the number of ways, through our website at www.caresource.com. There's a link to the foundation information there. Also, our toll-free number is listed out there as well, where they can reach out to us and give us a call, and someone, or, you know, those directly can reach out to me at steve.smitherman@caresource.com. And I'll make sure to get them directed to the right individuals to start having those conversations.
Now, since this has all kind of been introduced now, do you have a timetable, at least how you'd like to be able to get the partners together to get this particular part of the program, to be able to take advantage of the $5 million investments that you're willing to put into affordable housing mm-hmm. projects to get these things started?
Yeah, I think the sooner the better. You know, one of the things that greatly concerns us is when these eviction moratoriums are lifted, what's going to happen to individuals. So the sooner we can get things in place and get them moving, I think it's going to be the better for everyone. So we're ready to move. It's just, you know, finding the partner and getting the ball rolling and getting these housing projects moving forward.
Steve Smitherman is the president of CareSource Indiana. CareSource Indiana is a nonprofit, multi-state managed care plan, but has over time committed funds for various projects that are aside from, at least for managed care, because they do have an impact on healthcare. And in this case, we're talking about a $5 million of investments that will be for affordable housing projects here in Indiana. And Mr. Smitherman, thank you very much for being with us to talk about it today.
Thank you so much.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.